A bomb whose creation would tip the scales of global power. A nuclear physicist who sought to redress the balance. The Bomb, a podcast from the BBC World Service. Season 2, available now.
Welcome to The Inquiry. I'm Charmaine Cozier. Each week, four expert witnesses, one question and an answer. July 2022. After days of walking and defying troops trying to hold them back with rounds of tear gas, thousands of people finally reach their destination. It's the official residence of the President of Sri Lanka, Gotabaya Rajapaksa. The chanting crowd force their way inside and demand his resignation. The president's security team have already moved him to a safe location. Some protesters jump into his swimming pool. Others live stream from the gym and other rooms in the palace of the man they blame for Sri Lanka's worst economic crisis for decades. Much of their outrage is linked to the president's ambitious but deeply flawed plan to overhaul how crops are grown in the country. So this week we're asking, did organic farming cause Sri Lanka's collapse?
Part 1. Sri Lanka in crisis.
The economic crisis was long in the making. Sri Lanka had been living beyond its means.
Dr. Ahilan Kadigama is a senior lecturer in sociology at the University of Jaffna in Sri Lanka. There are scheduled power cuts where he lives, typically two a day for a total of 3 hours. We spoke to him during one of them.
There's shortages of fuel, of cooking gas, of even many food items, and prices have risen drastically. The price of bread has tripled over the last 6 months. The price of rice has more than doubled, and there are large queues. Sometimes people wait for days to get a few liters of petrol or diesel so that they can carry out their livelihood. So the entire economy is grinding to a halt.
Medical supplies are hard to find. Energy use is rationed because the government can't afford to import fuel.
Most schools are closed now. A lot of government offices are only functioning a couple days a week. The streets look empty. Buses are crowded and packed, and people often have to wait for 2-3 buses to get on the next bus. So every day is a challenge for people.
The pain is being felt across the country.
What's really worrying is that in many rural areas or in the urban shanties, people are finding it hard to even have 1 or 2 meals a day. And this is going to probably cause malnutrition. We are going to really make it difficult for the next generation. Their education is disrupted, and now even their food and nutrition.
3 years ago, the government cut taxes, so revenue has been lost there. More recently, it defaulted on international loan payments worth billions of dollars, so it can't spend its way out of trouble.
Since Sri Lanka defaulted on its international debt, now it's unable to borrow even from friendly countries like Japan and China. Sri Lanka is trying to go through a process of debt restructuring, but that process is dragging out. And in the meantime, Sri Lanka can only rely on its foreign earnings and remittances to ensure all these imports. In a time where global prices for everything from oil to fertilizer to wheat are greatly on the rise.
There have been talks with the International Monetary Fund for an emergency $3 billion bailout. But if it happened, Sri Lanka would have to commit to raising taxes and interest rates, something that would not be popular at all. Some of this economic pain stems from wider problems that other countries are facing, like rebuilding after the COVID-19 pandemic or global price rises for goods in short supply due to the war in Ukraine. But Arhilan Kaidigama says a substantial part of this financial unravelling could have been avoided. In April 2021, President Rajapaksa announced his intention to switch the country to wholly organic food production within 10 years. It marked the end of using synthetic fertiliser on crops.
And it was the fertiliser ban that has pushed us into a food crisis in addition to the economic crisis. If we hadn't banned the fertilizers, at least we would have enough food to eat now. And the government has to take full responsibility for having created this food crisis through the ban on chemical fertilizers.
The ban kickstarted a chain of events that accelerated Sri Lanka's economic implosion.
Seasonal vegetable production has also greatly reduced. And this has been compounded by the fuel shortages, where farmers are not able to plow their fields, irrigate them, or transport their produce. So along with the fertilizer ban and the low yields, and now with added challenges, farmers have almost given up on agriculture. They're being squeezed on all sides. Many of them are abandoning their fields. And when they abandon the fields, not only are their livelihoods affected, those day wage laborers who work on those farms, their livelihoods are also affected. And without agriculture getting going again, we cannot solve this crisis just by importing food grains, because as you can see, their entire livelihood is also disrupted. Unless there is a quick turnaround, we are looking at a very scary situation of even a famine in the next few months.
Part 2, the Green Revolution.
Agriculture is very important, particularly when it comes to employment.
Jivika Virahava is a professor of agricultural economics at the University of Peradeniya in Sri Lanka. Farming and related industries are crucial to the economy.
25% of our labour force is engaged in the agriculture sector. What it means is that 2 million people were working in the agriculture sector. So if you look at our contributions to GDP, you will see that agriculture sector itself contributes around 7%. However, if you look at food manufacturing, you can see that another 6% is contributed by food manufacturing. So even when you look at the gross national production, agriculture and food constitute fairly a large amount.
Sri Lanka relies on its smallholder farmers for around 80% of its domestic food supply.
The main one is rice. It is our staple food and we need around 10 kilograms per person per month. And we were more than self-sufficient in rice. And also in vegetables, tropical fruits, coconut, meat, eggs.
It took many years to reach that point. Back in the 1960s, a global initiative to ease malnutrition in developing nations was rolled out in several countries, including Sri Lanka. It was called the Green Revolution. The idea was to boost production using high-yielding varieties of traditional crops alongside modern cultivation techniques like nutrient-heavy growing methods.
We had to encourage farmers to use more and more chemical fertilizers because we can get a good harvest from these improved varieties if and only if we apply sufficient doses of chemical fertilizers. So we started to provide a subsidy to the farmers starting from 1962. And that is to encourage farmers to grow improved varieties of rice which are high yielding.
The majority of Sri Lanka's small farmers are poor and can't afford chemical fertilisers without state help. So substantial discounts were introduced, sometimes up to 90% off market prices. Despite the expense, ending the scheme was a step that no politician dared to take.
1 million paddy farmers receive this chemical fertilizers at subsidized rates. So what happens if you remove this? They will lose the confidence of the government and they will find it hard to produce paddy at a reasonable cost. So that can increase rice prices. So everything is linked.
There's another significant price attached to this raw material essential for Sri Lanka's economic growth, the cost of importing it.
We do not produce chemical fertilizers in Sri Lanka. From 1960s, we have been relying on the world market to fulfill our chemical fertilizer requirement.
As well as that, Sri Lanka also has to buy in supplies of sugar, wheat and milk. It also imports maize, which feeds cattle. Traditionally, Sri Lanka has paid for those goods using money from selling crops like tea, coconut and spices overseas. Before the pandemic, agriculture made up around 20% of the country's total exports. International goods are paid for in US dollars, which boosts Sri Lanka's foreign exchange reserves. They took a big hit in early 2020 when the country's lucrative flow of foreign tourists halted due to COVID.
We depend on foreign exchange earnings. One is tourism. So tourists stopped coming to the country due to the restrictions imposed.
Around the same time, global supply chain problems triggered a shortage of fertilizer ingredients. Demand and prices rocketed. Sri Lanka's finances took another hit. Decades after the Green Revolution had increased crop yields substantially, there came reports of illness.
For some time, many farmers in the north central province of Sri Lanka were subjected to CKDU.
The first cases of CKDU, or chronic kidney disease of unknown origin, emerged in the mid-1990s. By 2021, Sri Lanka had become a CKDU hotspot.
Some people suspected that it is due to chemical fertilizers applied by these farmers, because farmers also do not make precautions. They do not follow safety guidelines when they apply agrochemicals, not only fertilizers, but also pesticides. However, these were like hypotheses. There is no scientific evidence to say that CKDU is due to cadmium and arsenic, which are present in chemical fertilizers. However, this claim is there. So environmentalists really wanted to see agriculture without chemical fertilizers.
So the government decided it was time for another agricultural revolution.
Part 3, the big dream.
People get very worried when you say there are toxic materials in the food that comes in that will reduce your expected lifespan and your kids will get ill because of the chronic kidney diseases.
Professor Budima Rumbe is an agricultural scientist at the University of Peradeniya in Sri Lanka.
We heard our president coming on TV and letting people know that he's going to immediately impose a ban on the synthetic fertilizers and pesticides.
In April 2021, President Rajapaksa announced that he would tackle health concerns head-on with a radical policy to grow 100% organic. At the time, there were concerns about the scientific evidence supporting the plan, but Budima Rumbe says vested interests had been lobbying the president for some time.
There were people from medical sciences, there were people from agriculture sciences as well, and there were clergy, Buddhist clergy, and there were many other private sector people who have been doing this organic agriculture to a certain level in Sri Lanka.
The global market for premium-priced organic produce can be lucrative, but not everyone was convinced that would be the case in Sri Lanka.
We all know quite clearly this is a very small niche market. This is a kind of a carrot that was used, saying that we can earn a lot of foreign exchange out of that. But originally, the idea was on human health.
Organic farming isn't new in Sri Lanka. Tea and vegetable growers have been doing it for years on a much smaller scale.
But what happened here was that the whole country was turned into organic. At least an attempt was made by the government to turn into organic.
It was another potential reason for the ban to save money on importing synthetic fertilizer, because that's very costly, isn't it?
At the time the decision was taken, this factor was never brought forward or not even put in the discussion. We actually thought as scientists that would have been the reason, but the hidden factor would have been the foreign exchange crisis that they were in.
Sri Lanka wasn't the first country to try and go fully organic either. Bhutan announced it planned to become the world's first 100% organic nation, but has struggled to make that happen.
They even had a time period or time span of 6 years to achieve this target. And they started preparing for this activity since 2003. But Bhutan found that they are in big trouble and they were in a situation where more than 50% of the staples that they consume had to be imported.
The warning signs were there that moving to 100% organic, even with years of planning, was unfeasible. Back in Sri Lanka, agricultural experts raised similar concerns.
All our estimates from the day that decision was made, we always told the government that it is an ill-fated decision that the government has taken. Myself, as well as other agricultural scientists from different universities, wrote to His Excellency asking for an audience, even for an half an hour, to explain the detrimental impacts. But those things went unheard, unfortunately.
With the world reeling from the COVID pandemic and Sri Lanka's economy already missing income from absent tourists, this organic revolution could not have come at a worse time.
Part 4. The dream turns to disaster.
It took the farmers by surprise and it took the rest of the country by surprise as well.
Saloni Shah is a food and agricultural analyst at the Breakthrough Institute, an environmental think tank based in California. She says problems with the organic plan were apparent from the start. The Sri Lankan government was quick to bring in a ban on chemical fertilisers, but it hadn't thought through what was needed to replace it.
There was not enough capacity within the country to produce their own organic fertiliser. 5 to 7 times organic manure would be needed to cover the nutrients that synthetic fertilizers provide. You need more animals to produce that much manure. Organic farming has lower yields, and so you need more land to also produce the same amount of crop. And so on a small, tiny island nation, there is just not enough land to both produce that much manure, but to also meet the amount of production that you would be able to achieve with synthetic fertilizers.
Its income-generating potential also came under scrutiny.
To put this in perspective, the country grows more tea than the entire global organic tea combined. So if they were to completely transition their tea production to organic, they would end up flooding the tea market and that could send prices into a spiral.
Producing and selling organic food around the world requires detailed inspections and testing over time to meet strict legal standards. None of that was in place.
There wasn't a regulatory framework that was implemented to advise farmers on what kinds of organic fertilizer to use and which ones were safe. Farmers were not provided sufficient technical guidance and advice on what kinds of practices to implement.
The ban also saw the end of the fertiliser subsidy, just as global prices for it rocketed. It soon became clear that farmers face losing crops and livelihoods.
There's two rice growing seasons in the country. The first one is called the yellow rice growing season, which is from May through September. So that started right as the ban was implemented, which is the minor growing season. And the major growing season starts in September and ends in March. So they were in a situation where coming into the Maha rice growing season, there wouldn't be enough fertilizer to support the harvest. Fertilizer prices have also been rising across the world, and that certainly impacts Sri Lankan farmers who are now also without subsidized fertilizers. And so losses were estimated to be around 40% for rice crop, and that would have an adverse impact on food security for the country.
Within just months of it first being introduced, the organic plan was crumbling and public backlash growing.
And so you quickly started to see protests across the country around this policy. People started to face food shortages and rising food prices and started to become pretty angry over it.
A sharp drop in rice yields forced the Sri Lankan government towards drastic and expensive action.
They normally import around 8,000 to 9,000 metric tons of rice. And so they're normally almost self-sufficient in rice. But now they're in a position where they've imported 400,000 metric tons of rice from India and Myanmar in anticipation of production losses impacting food security. And rice prices had already risen, and people's ability to purchase rice has also declined due to the depreciation of the currency and soaring inflation. And so all that put together spells a food security crisis.
At the start of November last year, President Gotabaya Rajapaksa reinforced his commitment to organic agriculture at the COP26 climate change conference in Glasgow, Scotland. Just weeks after that speech and 7 months since the ban began, Sri Lanka's government was forced into a U-turn.
They were in a position where they were compelled to reverse the ban. They didn't provide an official reason. The government partially reversed the ban in late November to allow synthetic fertilizer imports, but just for key export crops like tea, rubber, and coconut, because those crops are a critical source of foreign currency as well. Tea brings in about $1.3 billion normally to the economy, but with the yield loss being predicted to be about 40% for tea, they could have suffered $425 million in economic losses.
Food producer income is down and the fallout continues. With no fuel to power machinery, farms can't function.
We know that in February 2022, the tea production was 20% lower than February 2020. And so combined, there'd be both an economic impact and an impact on food security.
So did organic farming cause Sri Lanka's collapse? Agricultural policy is central to the country's success. There are economic problems beyond direct government control, like record global prices for the imported goods it's buying with dwindling foreign exchange funds. But the ban and the fallout are self-inflicted. Basic considerations were missed: the natural fertiliser shortfall, a lack of preparation time for farmers, and no contingency plans to plug the gap from lower organic yields. It was a move which deepened the wider financial crisis and proved disastrous for the country's food supply. President Rajapaksa has stepped down. An uncertain future lies ahead, and as our first expert witness, Ahilan Kadigama notes,
Sri Lanka is in the middle of much political turmoil, and it is to be seen whether the new government that is formed and the new leadership give agriculture the importance that it needs and to focus on the food system so that we can avoid a famine over the next year.
This edition of The Inquiry was produced by Louise Clark-Rowbotham, researched by Christopher Blake, and presented by me, Charmaine Cozier. The editor is Tara McDermott and the technical producer is Richard Hannaford.
Quantum mechanics and nuclear physics was just emerging.
A brilliant scientist at the heart of a secret atomic research program.
He had a lot of physics know-how.
A seemingly ordinary homemaker who befriended him.
She was very much part of the community.
Both hiding the same dark secrets.
Each holds the other's life in their hands.
From the BBC World Service, The Bomb uncovers the double lives of atomic spy Klaus Fuchs.
Klaus Fuchs was spying for the Russians.
And his Soviet agent handler, Ursula Kuczynski.
This was cast iron evidence of Soviet espionage.
Search for The Bomb wherever you found this podcast.